Hello and welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. In today's lecture, we're going to talk about air masses, air mass source regions, and the various types of fronts. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the first half of Chapter 8 from the Aaron's text. Last lecture, we talked about global wind systems and ocean and atmosphere interactions like El Niño and La Niña. Today, we're going to start talking about how all of these winds, ocean and air interactions manifest as fronts and how different air masses came to be. First, let's talk about what an air mass actually is. An air mass is a really big blob of air with similar properties. They are usually around 1,600 kilometers or about 1,000 miles across and can be several kilometers thick. A change in weather occurs when one air mass moves out and a new air mass moves in. This change from one air mass to another is called a frontal passage. With the frontal passage, we see changes in temperature, pressure, relative humidity, and wind direction. Air masses are formed when air moves over and remains over large regions that exhibit very similar properties. The most general ways to describe air mass source regions are warm and cold. Polar and tropical regions tend to exhibit the correct properties to serve as air mass source regions. Cold polar regions tend to stay cold year-round, and tropical regions near the equator tend to stay warm year-round. The mid-latitudes tend to be strongly variable in temperature and humidity, and therefore are not good source regions for air masses, though they can be affected by both polar and tropical air masses. We can categorize air masses by their temperature and humidity. First, we have polar air masses. These are designated with a capital letter P. They form over northern Canada and the Arctic. They tend to be cold. Next, we have tropical air masses. These are designated with a capital letter T. They form to the south of the United States, and they tend to be warm. Next, we have maritime air masses, designated with a lowercase m. These air masses form over oceans, either the Pacific, North Atlantic, subtropical Pacific, or the Gulf of Mexico. They tend to be humid. Finally, we have continental air masses, designated with a lowercase c. These air masses form over land, either northern Canada or northern Mexico. These air masses tend to be dry. Air masses are designated by two-letter combinations describing whether they are M or C, P or T. The combination of moisture content, designated by C or M, with temperature, designated by P or T, describes the most basic characteristics of the air mass with regard to temperature and humidity. The possible air mass combinations are MP, which are formed in the North Pacific or North Atlantic, MT, which are formed in the subtropical Pacific or the Gulf of Mexico, CP, which are formed in northern Canada, and CA, if formed over the Arctic, since A is for Arctic, and CT, which are formed over northern Mexico and the southwest USA. Let's go into a little detail about each. We'll start with the continental polar air, designated CP. Remember, there is also continental Arctic, designated CA, though we don't see this often affecting the continental US. These air masses are cold and dry. During the winter, the air is cooled by the land, creating a stable air mass that is mostly cloud-free. In summer, the air mass may be warmer and slightly more humid, though the CP air masses tend to remain farther north and therefore do not influence as much of the continental US as during the wintertime. Maritime polar air masses, or MP, are typically humid and cool. They generate low-level stratus clouds, which maintain instability through cloud-top radiative cooling. This leads to somewhat unpleasant showers in the Pacific Northwest and to much of the western U.S. winter weather. Continental tropical, or CT, air masses are typically hot and dry and form over the desert regions of North Mexico and the southwest U.S. The intense surface heating creates very unstable air, but is generally cloud-free because of the extremely dry conditions. If, however, some moisture is acquired, intense thunderstorms can develop. Occasionally, if this type of air mass remains over a region for some time, it can bring drought, especially to the plain states. Maritime tropical air masses, or MT, are typically warm and moist. They can be unstable because of high heating from warm waters and have ample moisture that could be converted into precipitation. MT air masses are ideal for triggering thunderstorms. Before we move on to fronts, I'd like to give you the next extra credit fact that will appear on the final. One of the largest temperature drops occurred in Jefferson City, Missouri, where the temperature fell 71 degrees from a high of 70 degrees Fahrenheit to a low of 9 degrees Fahrenheit the next morning. Now that we have an idea about air mass types, where they form, and what type of temperature and humidity to expect within them, we can address how these different air masses interact with each other. This is called the polar front theory, or the Norwegian cyclone model. It was developed by Norwegian scientists during World War I. The theory states that mid-latitude cyclones, which we'll talk about in detail during the next podcast, develop in conjunction with the polar front, where cold equatorial moving air collides with warm polar moving air. These collisions create fronts. In the upper atmosphere, the polar front is continuous, but at the surface, it is discontinuous. Fronts are boundary surfaces that separate air masses of different densities. Think about temperature and humidity differences. They can be interactions between warm, cold, dry, and moist, or any of the other combinations described previously. They are usually 15 to 200 kilometers wide and are relatively narrow. They are represented by narrow lines on a weather map. We have five types of fronts that we'll talk about in detail: warm, cold, stationary, occluded, and dry lines. Let's first talk about what happens at a front. Warmer air overlies cooler air because it is less dense. This is important for when we think about fronts. Ideally, the fronts move in approximately the same direction. The front itself is the barrier that travels with the air masses. No matter which air mass is moving faster, warm or cold, the warm air always moves above cold air because of the density differences. The term for this is overrunning and is defined as warm air moving over colder air. Now, let's start talking about warm fronts. A warm front passage is characterized by temperatures changing from cold to warm. The symbol is a red line with filled red semicircles on the side of the line pointing in the direction that the front is traveling. They are characterized by a gentle slope with an increase of 1 kilometer in vertical height for every 200 kilometers in the horizontal. The moisture content and stability of the warm air mass determines the amount and type of precipitation that is experienced at the surface. As a warm front approaches you, you would experience certain types of clouds in a predictable order. If you're standing far from the warm front and it is headed towards you, you would first see cirrus, then cirrostratus, then altostratus, and then when you're close to where the front is located at the surface, nimbostratus. Again, the lifting associated with warm fronts has a large horizontal component with a gradual slope and a slow rate of advance. Warm fronts typically travel about 15 to 20 miles per hour, or 25 to 35 kilometers per hour. And you would experience a change in wind direction, or a wind shift, as the front passed, from east in the cold air region to southwest in the warm air region. As the front passes, you'd experience a rise in temperature. The type of precipitation associated with warm fronts is light to moderate precipitation over a large area for a long time. Let's move on to cold fronts. Cold fronts occur when temperatures change from warm to cold after a frontal passage. The symbol is a blue line with solid triangles pointing in the direction that the front is traveling. The slope associated with the interface between warm and cold air is steep, with a 1 kilometer rise for every 100 kilometers in the horizontal. This is twice as steep as the slope of a warm front. Why is the slope steeper for a warm front? Well, friction slows the surface position of the front compared to its position aloft. That's because cold air is more dense and encounters greater friction at the surface. Cold fronts travel much faster than warm fronts, averaging around 20 to 35 miles per hour or 35 to 50 kilometers per hour. The type of precipitation experienced at a cold front is much more severe and violent due to the fast uplift associated with the steep slope and the rate of warm air ascent. We can consider the types of clouds that we'd experience as we approached a cold front. Way out ahead, we'd be mostly in clear skies with some possible altocumulus or cumulus clouds. As we approach the cold front, we'd experience towering cumulus clouds. After crossing the front, we'd enter a region of cold, dense, subsiding air that is mostly cloud-free. Remember, the lifting associated with cold fronts has a very large vertical component due to the steep slope and very fast rate of advance. For cold fronts, the wind would shift from southwest on the warm side to northwest on the cold side. The precipitation tends to be heavy and violent over a small, narrow area for a short time. The weather behind the cold front is usually characterized by subsiding continental polar air, usually cloudless and generally stable, which inhibits cloud development. Let's move on to stationary fronts. A stationary front is a front between warm and cold air masses that is very slow moving or not moving at all. Airflow is parallel to the front. The symbol is alternating warm and cold front symbols with the cold color or warm color and shape pointing away from its air mass. For example, the blue triangle would point into the warm air and the red semicircle would point into the cold air mass. Our next type of front is an occluded front. The symbol is a purple line with alternating purple triangles and semicircles that are both on the same side. Occluded fronts happen when warm air becomes suspended over cold and cool air previously associated with warm and cold fronts. The weather near an occluded front is complex. There are two types of occluded fronts. A cold-type occluded front that typically occurs in the Rockies, where the weather resembles cold frontal weather and the cold front air is colder than the cool air it is invading. The warm-type occluded front is usually seen on the Pacific coast and involves milder maritime air invading continental polar air. Regardless of type, cold or warm, the ultimate result is that the warm air is lofted above cool and cold air. This cuts off the source of energy in cloud development and ultimately causes the frontal systems to dissipate. Finally, we have dry lines. Dry lines are represented by a narrow brown line with hollow brown semicircles. Dry lines are narrow zones where there is an abrupt change in moisture. They typically occur when dry continental air converges with humid maritime tropical air. The denser continental tropical air acts to lift the less dense maritime tropical air, often with violent thunderstorms as a result. That finishes up our lecture on air masses, air mass formation, and fronts. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!